This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Once upon a time, two men decided if they were making the cut. Then they made the cut. And now JT and Aaron are talking everything from wrestling to pop culture and beyond. Because it's no holds barred.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to the danger zone that is No Holds Barred. We are coming at you for a third time tonight. We got an interesting show lined up for you. My name's Aaron, and at this point, come on in. JT, my co-partner here. How you doing, my man?
Dookie!
Oh, you got a teen weenie! We don't talk enough about No Holds Barred, but who knows? Maybe it'll happen tonight.
We got plenty of time to cover that. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? How was the last hour of your evening?
The last hour of my evening was actually peaceful.
Nice.
How about you?
It was fine. I'm sweaty.
Me too. Well, actually, I showered. I was sweaty.
No, like I want the listeners to get a really good image of me glistening.
Yes, just dripping with sweat. No, I played basketball, and Mrs. Cowboy, Roger's wife, babysat the kids because my wife went out. And when I got home, my son was already passed out on the couch. I'm like, this is beautiful.
Nice.
So I just carried him upstairs, and I was actually able – he still sleeps in a pull-up. He's pretty much potty trained, but just he struggles through the night.
Okay.
So I was able to get that on him without him really waking up, which was like –
That's a feat. That is like a feat,
10
my
out
friend.
Of 10 feet right there.
Yeah.
So he crawled right back to bed as soon as I got it on him. He was just cooked.
It's funny how you measure those milestones about what you're able to do. Like, it starts from like getting them from the car to the bed. Like, if you can get that down,
yes.
You feel good. Now, if you can change their clothes, you're even better.
Yeah, with my daughter, we can never get – like, she'd wake up every time we carried her anywhere. If he's out enough, you can carry him around. But lately, he's been doing the fucking – because it's summer and they're doing more stuff and – my daughter's out of school, so my wife takes him out a lot during the day. Like, he's been doing, like, the 4:30 passing out. And then he wakes up, and he's just, like, a dick, and then he eats. And then he's up to, like, 9, you know, whatever. Like, he doesn't want to go to bed. So I told my wife tonight, I'm like, please, like, don't let him fall asleep. So he didn't. He did a lot. And then he was
Did she just done. Shake him to keep him awake?
Well, I said if he falls asleep, like, in the car, like, don't let him go. Like, wake him up. You know what I mean? Like, just when he get home, wake him up. So
yeah, like nail the brake.
Right. Just make him smack his head against the back of the seat. So he never fell asleep, I guess. So he was good. So I ate my steak and cheese sandwich that I earned at basketball. And then I let my daughter watch some TV and then just go to bed. So, and then I read my Breaking Bad book. So it was very peaceful last hour or so. I was like, I never get this like 25 minutes of complete not wanting to do anything and complete silence and just read my book. It was wonderful.
Yeah. I feel I have to take those times at like 11:30 PM at night. Like, all right, I can read now. Oh, my God, I'm asleep after two pages.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I take the nighttime to do a lot of, like, this garbage podcast or, like, you know, prep for podcasts, watching MSG shows, watching Nitro, you know, whatever. So, like, even that I don't usually take as, like, reading time where I'm reading the fucking comics or reading Twitter or talking online. You know, it's like I'm doing all that stuff, and I never take the time to, like, sit and read. So what I've done that lately is, like, when we went away a few weeks ago at night, that was, like, my reading time. And so, you know, I try to work it in here and there. So it was nice to just have, like, you know what? I'm waiting on Aaron. I'm just going to see her read.
Oh, that's so nice to hear you waiting on me.
Mm-hmm.
That feels good. It feels nice. So normally we start off every episode with our no holds barred moment of the day. It could be anything from screaming at people to looking at a guy taking a leak and calling him a teeny weenie. It could be anything like that. Do you have a no holds barred moment of the day today? Today?
Kinda. It's kind of a pride point because I'm getting old, and you know
you are.
But conversely, I feel like I'm in like the best physical shape of my life, and
really?
It's proven because 2 nights ago we played basketball on like a real court because our normal driveway court was busy. It was taken. So we played 2 nights ago on an actual court, and it was like a real workout because it's bigger than where we play, and you're not used to it. You're all thrown off. And then we actually, a rare second game of the week, we played tonight. So I went back out there 2 nights later, and I feel like I did something that like 5 years ago I wouldn't have been able to do, and that's play 2 games in 3 nights at like a real high energy pace, like covering really good guys that are good at basketball, and had a good game. So I was, that was my no holds barred personal moment of the day, that I was able to play 2 games in 3 days at a high level.
Were you able to rack up a triple double?
I did fuck around. I may have come close. I definitely would have had double digit points. I probably did double digit rebounds, that's for sure. And I had at least 5 blocks. I don't know how many assists I had, so at least a double double.
So almost on the way to Ice Cube's good day.
Correct. Like I said, I fucked around. Double double.
Did you have to use your AK today?
No. No, so it was okay. A good day.
It was a good day.
Yes.
Well, listen, mine is boring.
So the Lakers did not beat the Supersonics? That made it boring?
No, not today. Not today. But as a former Supersonics fan, I always cringed at that line.
Yeah.
Fucking Ice Cube. I wanted Sean Kemp to just dunk over that AIDS-ridden Magic Johnson. Fucking send him to the ground.
I want Sean Kemp to go knock up Ice Cube's wife.
Oh, that'd be the best.
Have another kid.
Oh, or just Sean Kemp to just go to town on Ice Cube.
Sure.
It could be Sean Cube.
Impregnate him.
Perfect. Yeah, that's right. Why can't men be impregnated?
Yeah, why?
Why, right? Right?
Sexist.
It's all a social construct, why men can't be impregnated. You know that, right?
Fucking Obama.
Oh, God. He ruined it for all of us. Yeah. Now, Trump. Trump's going to turn it around.
He is. He's going to make men's uteruses great again.
He's going to exactly make men pregnant again. God, I hope I don't have to birth that out of my dick. Right? Ooh, I'd feel upset birthing like an ant out of my dick. Never mind a baby.
Are you watching Glow? Do you watch Glow?
I have watched the first season. I haven't started the second yet.
Right. Does
a man birth a baby out of his dick?
Well, no, but they do reference – they watch one of Sam's movies, and they reference that. They go, is this the one that had the anal birth? So it made me think of that because
– You were born out of your mother's ass. That's my favorite line from the second Austin Powers.
Born out of love, and I still love him. That's my favorite line from Beyond the Mat. Glow season 2, by the way, I highly recommend. Once you watch it, we can do it as our pop culture segment.
Sure. It's soon. As soon as I get on it, too, I'm sure I'll binge it because I binged the first season in like a day and a half kind of thing.
I still have 2 left, or 1.5 left. So that should be my next gym trip. I'll finish that. But it's excellent. Episode 8, as a wrestling fan of like the 80s, Aaron, episode 8 should be like cream filling in your donut. Like it should be like perfect for you. You'll love it. Like I thought it's my favorite Glow episode, but I think you need to have been like grew up at a certain time and appreciate a certain genre of like local TV or something like that to really appreciate it. And I think you will. It's really, really good.
Cool. I mean, it's coming up soon. Also, I'm watching Better Call Saul too. I haven't touched anything in like a week. I was trudging my way through In Your House 3 and 4 in the last couple of nights. So that's been great.
we'll be talking about In Your House 4 on Wrestling Warzone pretty soon.
No, and as soon as I finish, I'm going to listen.
Hmm.
Compare Saucy. Notes. I'm going to be told all my takes are shit. All right, so my no-holds-barred moment of... Steve Bennett. My no-holds-barred moment of the day was...
to Steve Bennett?
Yeah. Yeah, great. Because, you know, those takes are just awesome. Anyway, we have been moving, and like I go to work for 6 weeks in Vancouver every year in January, February, and since I've been back in February, it's been this weird non-stop whirlwind of just bullshit like since February, since literally the day I got back.
Mm-hmm.
And today I took a goddamn day off.
Look at you.
I did nothing. Like I woke up, my wife took the kids to they do soccer on Friday mornings, took them out, slept in. I watched Star Wars: The Last Jedi for like the 6th time. I put some matches that I've downloaded into my spreadsheet of all the matches that I own. I didn't have to use my AK either. It was an awesome day, but it all stemmed from just taking the day off.
It's amazing what that could do for you.
I know. I don't want to kill myself tonight. You know,
Well, good on you. You treated yourself. You had a nice day. I'm glad to hear that.
Treat yourself. Mm-hmm. We're going to get started with, well, as you guys know, the GWWE tag team, the top 100 tag teams in WWE, WWF history, is still going down, mostly on a Facebook group now. But we're breaking down on No Holds Barred a bunch of teams for you. And the first team we're going to talk about tonight is a team that I feel we might have a little bit of a disagreement on, and that is Money, Inc. JT, how do you feel about Money, Inc.?
I feel
that's okay. The best part about Money. Best part about Money, Inc. Right there.
Money, Inc. You know, they're like one of those teams where I don't know. I could see them coming in like in the 20s for people. I could see them in the 50s. I could see them in the 70s. I think it depends what you value. Like, technically speaking, like, they're a very sound team, right? They're sound in the ring. I think sound's a good word for those two guys, especially IRS.
Sure.
He's very sound.
Is the sound boredom? Because that's what I'm hearing.
They had good heat. They had good heat. They were very good heels. They were good at cheating. They had Jimmy Hart. They had good music. Like, they're like a nice, nice heel time. Team. But their output is where it, you know, it starts to get questionable because, and we were talking about this the other night. I think it was it when we were watching SummerSlam 96? I believe so, right? We were watching SummerSlam 96 as part of our group watch project. And I don't know if you were following the conversation at all, but that, of course, has that awful, terrible fucking four-way tag match. I think it's the first ever, like, fatal four-way in company history, but it's the Body Don is Smoking Guns, Godwins, and the New Rockers. And to me, that's like the absolute valley.
Bottom is it the valley because of the – because I found when I watched that – and I didn't watch the other night, but I've watched it recently.
Yeah, I know. You get like
four I found when I watched – I did not give it 4.5, you fucking well monster. No, I think I gave it like 2. But anyway, is that because of in-ring quality or because of just who the teams were?
Yes.
And how lame the teams were.
Right. It's not a good match, but it's whatever. It's fine. But yes, the complete apathy of the tag division. It's so sterile and so bland. And like the Smoking Guns, we talked about them last episode. They're just like the picture of that era. And the Body Donnas were waste by that point. Like Candido's in a neck brace. He doesn't even get in the match. Like he's just trudged out there because they had no one else. And the Godwins, like they pick up a bit when they turn heel. But at this point, his face is they're done. And
New Rockers.
The New Rockers is, you know, nothing. So it's Bloody like, it's just like, it's such a black hole of tag action. And that was the division right there. Like those four teams were the division for most of 96.
And it's funny because for the first time in a very long time, storyline wise, they were actually putting focus on the division.
Right.
Because they had the whole, Sonny. Forever. They just left it forever. But now they actually were doing stuff with Sonny, but it was with the worst possible teams.
Right. And she's the best part of the division throughout the year. And, like, the Guns are fine heel act. They just had no one really, like, of interest against them. So, but then the next month is when Bulldog and Owen come in.
And it
turns around, right? From there, you get Furnace and LaFon, and then you get Austin and Michaels, you know, and Dude Love. And, you know, like, you pay, and then it just picks up. And
LOD comes back.
Right, LOD, and then the Outlaws, and, you know, and then you start to pick up steam. And it's still not great in 98, but you're getting movement, right? It's in the main event scene and the shit going on. But to me, that slow, steady decline started in early 92 when the LOD loses the titles to Natural Disasters. I think that, like, the peak, I mean, the absolute peak of the tag division is probably, like, what? Demolition winning the tag titles at WrestleMania 6.
Yeah. Colossals. And then it's on a slow it kind of peaks up a bit when the Hart Foundation wins, I find. And they kind of carry it for a while. And
well, I think like the absolute peak of the mountain is Demolition winning at 6. And then I think it's like almost like it's like a long peak, you know, from there to like almost WrestleMania 8 to me is like, it's just like a line across or maybe like a slight decline. And then
it goes down a bit with Crush, like with that incarnation of Demolition, but then it kind of levels out.
Yeah, you get the Hart Foundation, but the whole division as a whole, right? You get the Harts, you have the Nasty Boys, you have the LOD. Like, it's still a pretty robust division, Power and Glory.
Bushwhackers.
Right, and, you know, even the heel Natural Disasters at first, like, are fine. You know, so it's like, you have a pretty good mix of you get a pretty good mix of teams still. It's not until LOD loses to the Disasters and they go on their little hiatus and the Disasters turn face and Money Inc. comes together, and then all of a sudden you start to decline a little bit more. Like, I don't think it starts strongly at that point, but that's where it starts going downhill, because you got the Beverly Brothers who aren't, you know, they're fine, but they're not really contenders, and then LOD is just nothing. So, and then by 93, we're, you know, you get the Steiners, but it's dragging. So to me, the decline really begins with Money Inc.'s title reign.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't pin it solely on them, because I really don't think they were given much to work with, like, throughout that year. It's like their big match is with the Natural Disasters, and then at SummerSlam is with Legion of Doom.
Awful.
With a coked out Hawk. I mean, just out of it, you know, just whatever. And that's carried by the atmosphere and DiBiase's white trunks. And then Survivor Series, they're in there with who? You know, face Nasty Boys, face Disasters, and the Beverly. So it's like what do they
still
really
the worst
have?
Team.
Huh? Still the worst team. I mean, what do they really have to work with? And then even at WrestleMania 9, you know, you got Hogan, Spindly,
terrible.
Off as Roids Hogan, and Beefcake, who had 3 years of ring rust on him. And they give him like 20-something minutes to anchor WrestleMania. So I feel like we never get to see them. And then by the time the Steiners arrive, like, they have some good matches with the Steiners, right? Especially that cage right before SummerSlam 93. It's like, you know, one of their best matches. And I think there's another good one out there someone mentioned. So, I feel like if they had more, maybe if the Steiners and the Guns that showed up like a year before, I feel like maybe we're talking a little bit different about Money Inc. Like, if they had like a real hot face team to go against that could go in the ring.
Best workers of all time, right? He should have been able to carry those matches on his own gracious back. Right?
I think by that point, he was a drug addict that was like all fucked up. So I don't know.
And yet you blamed Hawk for being coked up. You mean to tell me that Ted DiBiase wasn't fucking wasted on something in Wembley Stadium?
Most likely. And like Steve Willey always mentions, those early 93 Raws where DiBiase looks like he's about to fucking have a heart attack on air. And he's like sweat, just pouring sweat and beat red, giving those promos in the Manhattan Center. Now, post-91 DiBiase is a rough sight as well. So, you know, and then you get poor IRS out there just soaking through his t-shirt, his dress shirt with his abdominal stretches. I think it's a team that if they had come together like 2 or 3 years earlier, just we look at them completely differently. I think the time they came together was just a rough time for the division, a rough time for DiBiase.
Yeah, and I just think Mike Rotunda, what is it? Which one is it? Bray Wyatt's dad. He, at this point, as soon as he came back in 91, I was not on board with him. Like, clearly a good wrestler. He knew how to do his moves, sound, if you will. But I don't recall ever liking one of his matches, even his singles run.
Him versus Iron Sheik. Oh, you're talking just as IRS.
Yeah, that's from, like, 1985. Like, I'm talking about when he came back in, like, what was it, 91 he came back as IRS?
Yeah.
A character that could never be a face, by the way.
No, definitely not.
Pay your taxes!
Hey, you paid your taxes. Nice job. Mate just went around like commending
people.
Here to go,
guys. Let me help you fill out your T4.
Yes.
So for me, I mean, like, I'm just going to hop on what you said. I think they killed the tag division.
I did not say that.
Yeah, you said, look, I can read between the lines, okay? They killed the tag division.
Between
the lines they're
on DiBiase's mirror, is that what you're saying?
And DiBiase's stomach near the end. You can see the lines, read between them. Look, I won't argue with you that those white tights were awesome. I won't argue with them for 1 second. I just think that as a team, they just have nothing to show for a very long run while they were on top. Their fault or not. For sure, they're going to make – I think they have to make my list, as much as it pains me to write their name probably. But I really believe that they and the Natural Disasters really were the nails in the coffin to that tag division. Like, I know it kind of died out later because they just didn't have anybody. But I think between those two teams, they made tag wrestling hard to watch and made me less interested in it. Like, I mean, when you're skipping ahead of Natural Disasters and Money Inc. at WrestleMania 8 to get to Owen Hart and Skinner, there's a problem with the tag title division. And they'll make the list, but I hope they don't finish high for me. They won't finish high for me. If someone puts them 20, I'd really like to see some I mean, I guess you could make the argument they kind of transcended the division, I guess, towards WrestleMania 9.
Well, but I mean, 93, I think they're better. Like, 92 is rough because there's not much going on. But with 93, you know, you get the Mega Maniacs feud, which is pretty heated. Like, on Raw, like, leading up to that is like, pretty hot. Like, they're really hated. And then the Steiner stuff is pretty good. And even they have that weird little two-week thing with the Beverly Brothers. Like, that's a fine match on Raw. So their 93 is actually not bad. It's that year-long 92 that doesn't give you much to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, it just makes you want to die.
And you're not – I mean, you're just still going by the pay-per-views. Like, you weren't even – go back and watch all those, like, prime times through that summer of 92 when, like, nothing was going on and they were just having –
Look, I'll be honest. I think we went through this when we talked about Ted DiBiase on our list, but like, I'm just not a huge fan of him in ring, like WWF anyway. Like, I think he was great before, but coming to WWF, I can't point to very many great Ted DiBiase matches.
Yeah.
And then we go to a period where he's not as good with a weaker partner, I think. Sorry, Bo Dallas, but I think he's weaker. And I just think it's not a recipe for success. And you're right. You're right when you say he had no one to work with. That's absolutely true. So it's not all their fault, but it's mostly their fault. And I think we can both agree on that.
I think your transcending comment was a good one too, because they fight with is it Warrior and Savage toward the end of the year, right before like Survivor Series. They have like a match that was like, or yeah. SummerSlam was in there somewhere. There's one where Warrior and Savage fight them and one where they fight the Nasty Boys. I forget which is which. But so they kind of transcended that level too.
It's kind of a cheat, though, because, like, Ted DiBiase used to be a main event guy.
No, I know.
So you're right and wrong. You're wrong. And right. I don't know. It's fine, you know? Just don't put them on your list. Anybody.
I expect them to probably be – they feel like a mid, like, 50 to 60 team to me. So.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And like, you'll – I mean, like – I'm positive when I'm making my list and I get to like team 40, I'm going to be stretching for teams that have any longevity. Right. So,
well, I think that's similar to the Guns, right? Like we said last week, you know, the real question for us or on these teams is when do you start deprioritizing them versus teams that had quick runs? Like how elite does a short run like Shawn Michaels and Diesel, right? They don't have many televised matches together, but one of the ones they had is one of the greatest in company history. So, like, you know,
right.
And then they have the triple header. You know, they get a few things. So, like, where does that lie versus, like, a team like Money Inc., who were champions and had a long run but doesn't have anything that touches that Action Zone tag? So, to me, that's where you start to really have that debate on these teams.
They don't have a match that, like, touches, like, the four click guys planning the match backstage.
Well, Razor, you know, it's funny because we have another short team – short-term team coming up, and we'll be touching some of these. But I think Shawn Diesel and Razor Kidd are ones we should explore as well.
We should just hit those up one time, like when we do, like...
Right.
Because they're so similar, right?
Yeah, Shawn and Diesel have a few, and then Razor and Kidd have a bit more together. But, yeah, I think those are two good teams to talk about, too, because they're like, prime examples of what we've been talking about. You know, like, Razor and Kidd have some really good matches with one elite, and that's better than anything the Guns or Money Inc. have had. So how does that qualify, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So Money Inc., I mean, see where you put them, but for God's sake, don't put them high. I mean, have some dignity with this project, please. Please. Who's next?
Do you want to do our short-term or our main eventers?
Let's do short-term because the main eventers are pretty big main eventers.
Okay.
So short-term, the team we threw out there was, I mean, a team that just kind of popped up this year and participated in – I guess it was the best match of this year's WrestleMania.
It sure and was. Might have been one of the best of the year for them on the main roster.
Well, it's very possible. It's very possible. And that's Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look, some people are going to look at this and say, that's crazy. They have one match. They weren't even really cohesive as a team because of who they were. What's the counter to that?
The match was fucking awesome. It was Ronda Rousey's first ever pro match, and she was in there working like she had been working for 10 years, better than other people on the roster. Everything she did resonated and counted. Now, I almost tossed out the idea of talking about Triple H and Stephanie on the show because I think they weren't mentioned too, based on this match, because Triple H in particular, you know, catches a lot of shit from both me and you, more you. But this is a match where his value as a ring general really stood out. Like if you rewatch that match, he is the glue.
Yeah.
Keeping that whole thing together, and his selling for Rousey and he's in the right spot in every single moment, you know, pushing them along. But Kurt did a fucking great job, too, of being in the right spot at the right time and helping Ronda tell the story of that match. And
Stephanie carried everything else.
Yeah, and I mean, she did her part. So they were all great. And, you know, Kurt, to me, is interesting in the match because it wasn't supposed to be him, right? They wanted The Rock. It felt like a bit of a downgrade, but on paper it makes sense. Like, okay, you got the two Olympians and everything else.
Sure.
And I think it actually worked out better because The Rock, I think, would have overshined Rousey, whereas Kurt was able to, like, steady the ship, hit his spots, but not stand out above Rousey. You know, because he's great, but only within the construct of wrestling, whereas The Rock is just, you know, maybe the president.
A god.
Someday.
A god on earth.
Right. I mean, so, you know, like him, you know, he was the perfect mix with Rousey. So, I mean, do they make the list? I think they're at least in the conversation for me when I look at all the short-term teams that had, like, a Hogan and T. Like, how do you rank them versus Hogan and T?
Hogan and T feel a lot more important. Like, in terms of, like, but, you know, that's also hindsight talking because mm-hmm. we don't know where this Ronda Rousey thing will go.
Correct.
Right?
Like, if she and Charlotte main event WrestleMania next year.
I think it has to be more than that. I think it has to spark, like, to compete with Hogan and T.
Okay.
I think it'd be great if she main evented with Charlotte. I think that's actually really interesting. But Hogan and T pretty much created WrestleMania, right? And brought new eyes to the product in different ways. So we'd have to see – it would have to be not just a change from within. Like,
right. So you're saying numbers have to go up for women's wrestling or whatever?
I don't know more with work, but yes, I think you'd have to see that kind of change for them to pass a team like Hogan and T.
All right, so say how about the women's – all women's pay-per-view? That's coming up. Like, that's a big part and part of Rousey and part of that stems from the success at Mania.
I guess it depends on how it does. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, again, I think it has to be you have to see an external change the right. way Hogan and T made an external change. Because they can tell us all they want, look, we're doing this with women, we're doing this with women. But if it's not reflecting in bringing in new viewers and whatnot, then, I mean, I'm happy to see it. But then you gauge if it's effective or not, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's something interesting there about that team. Like, I mean, I don't know if you're like this, but when I saw her and The Rock at WrestleMania 31, mm-hmm. all I could think about was like, all right, when they get to the back, they're fucking banging. Like, they're just banging.
Right.
Like, they must, like, there's these two ripped athletes. They're out there all fucking charged up. There's no way they're not having a child, like, immediately following this pay-per-view. Whereas with Kurt, what I thought was interesting and fun was that it felt like a real friendship. I don't know if they're really
almost
friends.
Like a father.
Yeah, almost. Or like a non-creepy uncle.
Right.
Like, with normal size hands. Like, it felt like an actual relationship in a world where they struggle to make actual relationships.
Right.
Like, I mean, you could tell Cesaro and Sheamus travel together and get along. That's one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy, I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, like, you can feel that these two, like, Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss, I don't know, it didn't really ever feel real and raw, despite the fact that I think they're actually friends, or at least were, right? Whereas these two, there was something there. So at the end, when they win and she hugs him, like, it's somewhat emotional. Yeah, like, it's cool. And that match was amazing. I actually just rewatched it, too. And I will give Triple H credit for most of it. I wish he sold like that for, you know.
Right.
The male wrestlers sometimes. But yes, he did great. I thought Stephanie was great. I thought the whole package was awesome. And I'd be on board. If they do another mixed match challenge, I mean, they got to put Kurt and Ronda back together. I know it's like they're the powerhouses, but like you can build the whole show around them.
Are you of the belief that they only did the mixed match challenge just to get the fans conditioned for that match at Mania?
No, because they've done tons of mixed match stuff before.
Right. Yeah.
Unless... I mean, unless they think that it's been too long,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, that was easily the best mixed match that they've ever had, right? Mixed tag? Easily.
No, WrestleMania 6.
All right, take the commentary out.
Yeah, for sure. Easily. Now, let me ask you something. Do you watch Lucha Underground at all?
I have not watched the last. I didn't watch season three. I watched the first two.
How do you feel about the mixed match stuff they do there?
I mean,
it's divisive.
I mean, I enjoy it. Like, I'm fine with it. But to me, that speaks more to because I just like internally feel that's the culture, right? Lucha
right.
is like I've just you know it's violent in its own way, but it's also very choreographed. Whereas like this didn't feel as choreographed. This felt a little bit more realistic.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. I was just thinking more along the lines of like in Lucha Underground, they tend to let the men and women just fucking kill each other, right?
Right. Yeah. The scene is equal.
Yeah. Whereas here they're not, or at least in this. But in this,
I think
match,
Rousey is
in this match. Yeah.
I think Rousey will be positioned as equal to all men on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, which is crazy. Braun Strowman would destroy her. Like, let's face reality here. Brock Lesnar would fucking break her neck.
Right. Right. But.
But yes, I see what you're saying. So yeah, I just think it's an interesting contrast because there's a lot of people that don't like the Lucha Underground mix stuff. They don't like the fact that men and women mix that way. Mm-hmm. But on the Lucha Underground show, the women are presented in a way that's almost equal to the men.
Right.
Which is and Ronda's the only one so far that's presented in a way that's equal to the men on WWE.
They're trying. I mean, I do think they're trying, right? I mean, this is as close as it's ever been. The women have main evented Raw, women have main evented a pay-per-view. They're going to have their own pay-per-view. They're probably going to main event WrestleMania. I mean, I think, unless they come up with some massive dream match, I really think they should just do Rousey Charlotte to main event WrestleMania next year. It'll be great for, you know, PR reasons and the women's revolution, and you have the, I mean, with Brock kind of his worth diminishing, like Rousey's clearly their biggest mainstream star that they have, and they should take full advantage of that.
How mad are people going to be when Charlotte wins?
Oh, very mad. They'll be very mad online. Yes, I mean
she's the one they pushed. They love her so much.
Really shouldn't, but yeah.
Yeah, so give them some consideration, Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey, because that match is awesome. And who are we finishing with?
But I do want to say, I think I will...
Oh, sorry.
Right now, I think they'll be in the 90s for me.
90s? I'll have to see. I don't know. Like, they'll be in the mix of those, like, thrown-together teams that I'll put on for fun.
Right, and to me, they'll warrant a spot. I mean, Kurt's one of my all-time favorites. Rousey's, you know, was my favorite UFC person, and now I really enjoyed her here. I think we'll look back at this as pretty historical. I think Rousey's going to be one of the best that they ever have, man or woman. I think it's already starting to show. And I think for historical purposes, they belong on the list. And for that match, they belong on the list. So,
cool.
All right. Our final team is our main event team. And before we talk about them, you better call somebody.
Is it Rockabilly? Are we calling Rockabilly? Because I can get Rockabilly on the phone.
Rockabilly all night long. Did you watch 97 pay-per-view yet?
Yeah, I did.
Did you enjoy Rockabilly versus Jesse James?
No, I did not. I hate everything about that Jesse James. I hate Rockabilly, but that Jesse James character, like, I mean, I think Steve Austin got over by kicking the shit out of him at the Royal Rumble.
Right down to a stupid jumpsuit.
Oh, there's a cathartic. He's singing in the ring, and Steve Austin just kicks the shit out of him. No wonder he got cheered.
It's funny too, because all that build was all for Disco Inferno. Remember, that was all the rumors, and then Billy Gunn just comes because Billy Gunn turned down Honky like a week before, and then they couldn't get Disco. They thought they were going to get him, and he turned him down. And he stayed in to lose to Jacqueline instead of Nitro. He stuck around. Yeah.
He's dressed basically the same. Like at first,
right.
too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it was completely last minute. It's just like, what the fuck? This makes no sense. Like, you just beat him up and turn him down, and now here he is a week later looking the same and is doing the same thing.
Honky Tonk Man doesn't have an extra suit. They can put him in.
It was stupid.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Disco, I mean, I think you could argue Disco probably made the right call. Because he stays on to WCW to like 01 in a fairly prominent role. Like, I don't know if he just knew the right people or what. Like, I don't think he has that run in the WWF at all, like what he has in WCW. So he made the right call staying. At the time, it seemed kind of dumb, but long-term, that worked out for him.
If Disco Inferno comes to WWF, Scott Taylor never gets put in Too Cool. It's Disco and Brian Christopher.
You think
probably.
So?
Maybe. So he's dancing with Rikishi. Maybe it's a mistake. He's dancing with Rikishi in 2 years. 3 years, sorry.
All right. So New Age Outlaws is the team we're talking about. All right. Quick, like, where do you see them finishing in your list?
Probably top 10.
Okay.
I don't see. I mean, I they might get bumped out. They have no classic matches.
Right. What's the biggest one? Dumpster match?
I guess that'd probably be it. Or one of the ones with Rock and Sock, or like, you know,
those matches kind of sucked.
Yeah, like you're not even just in terms of like spectacle. You're not putting them on the list for the matches.
Right.
But you're putting them on the list for like. I mean, they were as over as anyone in a time. I mean, they were almost as over as Austin and Rock.
Right.
For a period, right? And those are two of the most over guys of all time. Now, you could argue that that was a period where everyone was over, but they were still a cut above.
Mm-hmm.
And they started with nothing. Like, they started as this shitty thrown-together team, and they even pretty much addressed that. They walked and dressed. And
well, it's funny because they remind me a lot of the B-team right now. Like, I'm curious how much they can, like, climb that New Age Outlaw ladder. It's like two guys that are acknowledged as being a cut below and, you know, are just goofing on guys dressed like, I mean, that has to be the inspiration for that team right now, right? They're pretty much just aping what the New Age Outlaws did.
Yeah, it's just, they just don't know how to do it anymore. So instead they're just copying guys, which always gets everyone over. But yeah, like, I mean, for the sheer time they were over too, like they were over basically from 98 to like the beginning of 2000. Like, I mean, they weren't always over as faces, but like they were a big team you could always count on. You could put them in there with main event guys, kind of like how you're talking with Edge and Christian. Mm-hmm. I felt they were more cohesive than Edge and Christian, even though they're very different. And just like, I don't think DX survives Michaels leaving without them.
No, definitely.
I don't think Triple H carries it on his own.
Would you think they were more over than Triple H in DX?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I think more than X-Pac. I mean, I think they were the most overactive of the team.
Of course. I mean, look, like they come out today and people will still say their bit. Like, you know it by heart, right? I know it by heart because we stood there and screamed it every time they came out. And they were a fun act. Mm-hmm. Like, their matches weren't like 5-star classics, but a lot of them weren't awful either. They both had memorable spots. And I just rewatched 98. And I think we talked about this when we talked about the Guns. Like, Billy Gunn is actually a really good tag wrestler.
Oh, he carries that team. I mean, for sure. He's carrying that team. And when they turn face, it works well, too, because Road Dogg, you know, is a pretty good face in peril. Like, that's his extent. It's like he's good at selling and getting his ass kicked.
Take a beating.
So his faces, they were solid, too. But no, they definitely transcended. And, you know, I like, you know, SummerSlam 98 is fun where they just beat the shit out of Foley. It kind of harkens back to the old Strikeforce. Brainbusters match, WrestleMania 5, you get a lot of that in there. And I mean, no, they're in there with the big dogs. And I agree with you 100% that DX flounders without them. I mean, they were teased like alongside an alliance with DX as early as January. Because when they start beating up Cactus Jack, and then they have that crazy thing where they come out and they beat up the LOD and shave their heads. And Sean kind of gives the endorsement. And he does kind of like the not bad. You know what I mean? Like, that's the...
Yeah.
Kind of like, okay, these guys are elevated. And that happens just within like 2 months. Because I think they don't start teaming until like October. And
yeah, it's around October.
Yeah, by December, they're killing Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie and boom, getting endorsed by Sean. So it's a quick rise for them. You could tell they had something. And yeah, I mean, sure, everyone was over, but they were also one of the first, like after Austin 316, like they were one of the first real catchphrases. Like Suck It was just kind of catching on, but it wasn't really rampant yet. Sean was just kind of doing it. So I think that, you know, you didn't know. Like, they do that pretty quick.
Their catchphrase is a paragraph. It's not like you smell what the Rock is cooking. It's like it has punctuation in it. It's so long.
Yeah. So, I mean, on that regard, obviously, they're one of the best tag teams in history. They were on top during the biggest, you know, 2 years. But they do have the downtime as well. The split and feud, which doesn't really count for this, but that didn't go well. Then they get back together. And then,
aren't we counting split? Like, if a split is really good, isn't that something we're... Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no real parameters, but
the split itself, but I don't, like, count the ensuing feud.
Right.
Like, I'm not crediting them for good or bad matches that happen after the breakup. But the breakup angle, to me, counts, for sure. Like, that's... But I don't... Do they even really have one? I feel like they just kind of go on their own, like, don't they?
Doesn't he turn on them? Doesn't Billy Gunn turn on them before the King of the Ring?
Well, no, because they're already apart over the edge. They fight it over the edge.
Yeah.
But I don't remember how he turned on them. Like, I don't remember exactly how it happened. I think they just kind of...
Probably something involving his ass.
Don't they just kind of splinter off when because Triple H starts doing his thing? And it goes, yeah, China stays with Billy.
It's got to be some sort of inciting moment. Like, they don't... I mean, Vince Russo, love him or hate him, there's no way he would just split them off without having them something happen.
Right. Well, they do the separate titles, right? Like, in the spring... Around WrestleMania, one's doing the IC, one's doing the hardcore. Yeah, I'm trying to think where the actual turn was. I don't know. But then they split up again in the spring when Billy hurts his arm and has to leave for a bit. And yeah. That's pretty much it. The match with the Dudleys isn't too bad.
No, it's fine. It's good. That's the Billy Gunn gets hurt there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think they get hurt at all for their comeback in 2014? Was it 14?
Yeah, I don't know. That's such a blip. I mean, it was actually kind of fun for a minute there. And I mean, I think the worst part is that they had them beat, you know, the Rhodes brothers, who were awesome. Exactly.
Yes,
sucked.
That's right.
But then, you know, them getting killed by the Shield of Mania is pretty fun. So, no, I mean, I'm all right. I don't think it hurts her. I don't think it hurts her help. It's one of those ones that just kind of exists, and that's it.
Yeah. Strange to see them as tag champs.
Yeah.
In 2014, but yeah.
Yeah, so 15
years after the fact.
Top 15 probably feels about right. I think they may be one of the teams that finishes the highest without having a real elite match. Does that sound right?
Yeah. I mean, would you put them ahead of, say, a team like the Hart Foundation?
No, probably not.
I don't know if I would or not. It's going to be a tough one. And I know that's probably blasphemy for some, but like...
I mean, I'm not going to have the Harts as high as some, but I think they're higher than the Outlaws. I think they just have more matches than the Outlaws.
I guess it's going to come down to like where I put the ones that I think are truly transcendent. Because there's only a handful of the truly transcendent ones, right?
Yeah.
So do they get a pass? Do they not? We'll have to see.
Yeah. Who are your transcendents? Hardys?
I don't even know Hardys. I think Hardys are just have such a big workload. They're close. Demolition, Outlaws...
Is that it?
Maybe the New Day, maybe. I don't even know with New Day. Maybe Demolition and Outlaws might be the only ones.
Yeah.
For my definition of what that transcendence is.
Right.
You? What do you think? You put the Hardys? I mean, obviously, for me, the Hardys are going to finish way ahead of them.
Yeah, I think, right? The Hardys are transcendent to me.
Yeah, maybe.
Especially their second run.
But they were never put in a role
for me, transcendent
they were never
is
treated
like
a main event act.
Yeah, but to me, transcendent is more than that because the different eras speak to different stuff. Transcendent to me is like kind of like a crowd pop thing, like pops and crowd reaction. Okay. Like they're top guys. Demolition has that. The Outlaws had that, and the Hardys had that. Just like
it's,
like mega.
It's funny because. Yeah, but that pop, I don't know how you measure that WrestleMania pop. I mean, it's obviously one of the biggest pops of all time.
Oh, no, you're talking about
it's
that.
It's based on such...
But even in, like, 2000, like, they were just getting crazy pops from the fans.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay. All right, I'm on board.
Okay.
Maybe not transcendent for me, but I could see what you're talking about.
All right. Why don't we take a break, Aaron? I think we covered this segment pretty well. But we're going to do some more wrestling when we return for our second fall. You excited about that? No? Okay. We'll be back after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
us for mad years. One love, yo. Yeah, that's right, he's got game. PE 1998.
If man is the father, the sun is the center of the earth. In the middle of the
and we're back! We are rolling along here with Fall 2. We're going to keep going with wrestling, and we are going to talk about a recent show that we watched. JT and I have decided that every once in a while we're going to throw on a random show from the WWE Network, and we're going to chit-chat about it. And this one is pretty much as random as it comes. What was it you wanted me to watch?
Well, I've been through my late night watching. I have many different tracks and things, but one of the tracks I've been watching is ECW from the beginning. For a while, I was doing a written series at PlayStation.com. I just kind of ran out of time to do those. But I didn't want to stop, so I kept trucking along. And I'm into early 94. And I was... so you were asking me, like, what should we watch at this random show? And I'm like, well, I've been watching these anyway. And they're pretty quick. So why don't we watch the March 29th, 1994 ECW Hardcore TV. Because I was kind of on it anyway, so I hunkered down. It was only 28 minutes on the network, so it was beautiful. And you were all in. So why don't you walk us through your thoughts on the show, and then I'll
share
mine as well.
Sure. Now, if you want to watch it, go watch it now, or watch along as I explain this nonsense. It's the 3/29/94. So the first thing I see, let me just say this right away. I had no context going into this at all. All right, that's the number one thing.
Okay, so you the never, first thing you have you watched any ECW?
Not the old one. Not this old. Like I watched ECW pretty much like most of 96, 97, 98. 99, 2000, towards the end. So we only got ECW.
So you have more grounding than me, actually. So, like, ECW was on my radar thanks to, like, PWI and stuff. America Online and the internet in the early days. I don't think I really saw ECW, though, until... I want to say maybe when I got to college, my roommate, Adam Murray from the PTBN Pop Feed, he had some tapes, I think. And then when it hit TNN, I watched it like every week. And I went over his house for a couple of pay-per-views. So, but I don't think I actually saw, outside of like when they showed up on Raw, I don't think I saw ECW until probably like 98, 99. So a lot of this is brand new to me too, outside of just like, I've seen the big stuff on DVDs and shit.
Sure. Sure. So, but why this becomes important that there's no context for this is the show starts with this man with long hair. That his hair is like 15 years past its prime.
Maddie in the house!
This guy is just screaming like immediately into the screen. And it's this montage of Ultimate Jeopardy, the match that no one can afford to lose. And then they list through these stipulations. Like mm-hmm. If Public Enemy loses, they have to leave the promotion. If Sullivan and Taz lose, they have to split forever. Like, I right away, I was like, both teams should be trying to lose. If I was Taz, I would not want to be partners with Kevin Sullivan anymore.
Right.
Public Enemy should get out of there. If Mr. Hughes lose, Jason gets locked in a cage. And then they cut to this weird promo, but they're splicing in action. Now, I don't know what's happening. Is this the show we're about to watch? Are we about to watch all these stipulation matches? Road Warrior can't use Road Warrior if he loses. And, like, finally an actual stipulation that, like, would matter. And it's all over this, like, awful guitar riff that, like, feels like it's straight out of a Super Nintendo character select screen. Like, you're flipping through the characters and this is... and they keep cutting back to this Maddie guy who's making Three Stooges references. They cut to Terry Funk cutting a promo, and he's basically in tears. Saying, I'm an old man! He's basically crying, and then it cuts to a scene of Shane Douglas murdering him with a plastic bag over his head.
Yes.
He's beating the shit out of him while he's like asphyxiating him. Douglas gives him this fucking sloppy pile driver and pins him, and I'm like, right away, I'm like, is this the match? Is this how we're starting the show? Like, this whole montage ends, and I by the time I see Douglas with the belt, I guess I'm like, this is a recap of a show?
Yes.
But there's no lead-in. Just tell me that it's a recap of the show. Like, you would expect, like, hey, this would happen at Fuck Sluts 98 or whatever, right? Like it's just noise and spliced together and weird promos, guitar riffs, and this guy screaming, and then Douglas has the belt. Were you as confused as I was?
No, because I've been watching the week to week, so I knew, like, this was right after one of their big ECW arena shows where they had been hyping up a lot. So this is the fallout from that.
If you could have told me that before.
What'd you think of Todd Gordon's outfit, by the way?
Awful.
It's like he's trying to be cool, right? He's trying to be cool, but he's just failing big time.
It's like low-rent Matrix before the Matrix.
It's really weird.
Long coat.
Actually, I don't think that was at the ECW arena. It was at, where's the show? They show it because Maddie's standing in front of it. It was it's some fucking building. But it was a big show for them. They've been hyping it for a while. So this was like, they're showing the highlights of it. And Maddie's just a hype man. I mean, he did some backstage work. I'm reading up about him a little bit here, Wrestling Classics. I guess he was a local DJ in New York City, friend of Paul Heyman. And he's here in 93 and 94, and then that's pretty much it. I think he comes back in 2000 for a little bit, it says.
It's the worst thing I've ever seen in anything.
Like, Maddie in the House.
My note is, and we just talked about Money Inc., who I hate. My note is, it's 6 minutes in, and I'm annoyed. But it's just because of Maddie screaming at me.
He's all right. He gets you pumped up. So Maddie is
in the house. He's in the house.
And they recap all the action. Those are pretty much the two big matches that they've been hyping. The big tag cage mayhem. And then Douglas is now back as world champion, defeats Terry Funk, who had been champ.
Crying Terry Funk,
who got asphyxiated.
Like, was he just concussed when he was giving that promo? He's just having trouble controlling his... Is that too dark? That he's, like, legitimately in peril during that promo?
I think he's just sad. He hates Douglas. They've been at it. To the nail for a while now. The thing with Douglas, too, is, it happened so fast. ECW switches, just overnight. It's amazing how quick they change. In 93, they're just kind of, chugging along as, a normal, just indie. And then Eddie Gilbert leaves. And almost overnight, it's like, boom, Shane Douglas is your champion. Like, Terry Funk's on even more than he had been. Public Enemy shows up. Sabu shows up. And, things, ramp up to... We're not extreme yet, but they ramp up to being extreme-ish.
Right.
Like, real fast. Like you said it. There's this cage, and then, they're using the bag to joke about Terry Funk. And, it's just, in your face. And I am curious. I think we talk about this at the end, but your thoughts on the way they structured their TV. Because... All it really is, it's meant to really draw you to the local shows, right? And to sell tapes. I mean, that's pretty much what the show exists. It was in syndication. It was on at 2 a.m. in a lot of different markets. You know, I think they had a decent slot on in Philly, but once they start branching out, it's on all our different times. So I think a lot of it was really here's some clips of the big stuff that happened over the weekend. Here's a couple of matches in full from those shows. And here's a shitload of hype. Here's all of our promos, all of our characters, all of our stories. We're going to tell you all, and because we want you to come out on April 5th to the Philadelphia, ECW Arena. So it's like that's how the show is built. It's not really meant to be it's not a through line to the show like Raw today, where it's structured and the show exists on that night. This is it's a recap of what had happened, spliced with a couple of showing us what happened, spliced with hype for the next stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm all for weird structures. I just didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah,
and then there's just so much screaming, and then I think by this point I figured out this. I put it together towards the end, but you got to remember this is a 6 minute montage, so that's a long time to be confused watching anything. Mm-hmm. Maddie's also doing something which drives me crazy. He keeps saying the ECW. it's the same thing as I hate when people say the WWE. You can't say the Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Right.
The World Championship Wrestling. It drives me crazy. So we get to the first match. I think it's Joined in Progress. It's just people fighting in the crowd. It's Public Enemy, who I love, against the Bruise Brothers, who are the Harris Twins, right? And the referee looks like a fat Tony Schiavone. And I know he's already fat, so take it up a notch, right? Yeah. And I'll say this right away. Rocco Rock actually looks like a flyboy here. He's slim. He's jumping. But they go into the crowd and you can't see a goddamn thing. Like, it's just nonstop chaos. There's a guy in the crowd with a Thriller jacket. He just keeps getting in the way. Next to him is, I can only assume, is the cop from the Village People. He's dressed head to toe in leather.
Yes, I call that out. I thought he was like a fan at first. It's like dressed in like whatever. But I think it was literally actual security. Like, yes, he looks like a Village People cosplay. I have that exact line in my notes.
He's got the mustache, the helmet. Why'd you wear the helmet?
It's really fucked up.
And like, they're fighting through the crowd and the poor sound techs are just trying to protect. If you watch this, the sound techs for me were the best part of the match because they're just doing everything they can to protect the soundboard whenever anybody comes near, because their lives depend on it probably. Like anybody comes near, they cover the soundboard. And I noticed right away the Harris brothers have the SS tattoo. Like, there's no fucks given about these Nazis being Nazis.
Right,
like,
none.
In plain view in ECW. But they're not even playing Nazis. They're just weird brothers, right?
Yes, correct. They like to bruise.
And at this point, I ran my, like, I put the cursor over the time segment, and it was like, you know how, like, it shows you, like, in WWE Network, it shows you the matches?
Yeah.
Like, jump to this. So this one was one match, and then a long segment of nothing. So I started to get worried. Oh, no, what is coming? So the Bruise Brothers win off of Public Enemy. Like, Public Enemy, like, jumps out of the crowd, mm-hmm. miss, and the Bruise Brothers just pin them, which I actually quite like, because, like, I we can maybe expound on this a little bit, but I find one of the things that actually hurts the modern product is that matches don't end until you've seen XYZ anymore. Like, it's cool to see a match end on someone else making a mistake. And I think, like, you'd bite on a lot more near falls if that still existed. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the shitty handmade ECW banner, which is hanging over the arena.
Oh, and also, I wanted to talk about something that we missed, but go ahead.
Oh, go on. I'm on to something else. So
okay. We saw Mr. Hughes before this. I think it was in a promo. Oh, yeah. They actually, if you continue to watch this, or, you know, if you went back to watch it, they actually present him really strong in ECW. I think it's some of the best booking he's ever had. Is he a guy to you that, like, was kind of missed on, or do you think he maxed his potential in, like, the major promotions?
I think he maxed it out.
Yeah.
I think ECW is using him better than anyone, and that's about it. Like, he just wasn't a very good worker, like, from what I've seen anyway. Maybe I'm missing something in ECW, but he just didn't move around an awful lot. Like, he felt like a lower rent Big Bubba, and I thought Big Bubba was a bit low rent to begin with.
Right. Yeah. I think it's the way he's presented, and he's not even like a great worker. He's just a bully. Like, he just bullies people. He doesn't swear. He just bullies people.
Mercilessly.
Yeah. No. He's just presented as a real, like. Again, he's just booked really well. I'll leave it at that. You know, he's a good heavy, a good big man, and he's presented like a monster. Like, you know, it's a credit. We've talked about it before. It's about Paul Heyman, right? Accentuates the positives, hides the negatives as best he can, and uses guys to their full potential in ECW. And a guy like Mr. Hughes, who had been kind of overlooked or not utilized that great, comes in, and he's positioned as a big bruiser, a big brawler. That should be hard to beat. It should be hard to take down. He should kick guys' asses. That's what he is. So anyway, I always find it interesting when guys like him show up here and actually have a kind of sneaky best run of the career.
Right. Like, I always like to, like, when big guys would go back there and have like a 1 or 2 week thing, like when Sid shows up there for like a month and a half or whatever.
Right.
Or even Scott Hall. Like, it's just weird to see those guys in that setting.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of that, like, throughout 93. Like Tito Santana comes in, he wins the title. Like, Don Rock, I was there for a while. Snook is still there in early 94.
So
a lot of those guys are still just kind of hanging around. And they do come in and out. Yeah, you'll see that a lot. The guys just pop in for a few weeks. And like, Hawk right now is in the middle of a big run. He's going to fight Shane Douglas in April.
Yes.
At their big show.
Well, we're getting there.
Yeah.
So at the end of this match, Public Enemy, I don't know why, but they're mad at Joey Styles, so they just fucking beat the shit out of him. For no reason. And after their first punch, his body is just basically dead, and they just beat his dead body with a chair mercilessly, like, for almost an uncomfortable length of time. And then we cut back to Maddie as though nothing has happened. Like, he's just happy and screaming back into the
we're back in the house.
Like, this is technically a guy he works with that just got, like, obliterated, right?
You think,
and then we cut.
You think WWF got the In Your House idea from Maddie in the House?
Absolutely. And then they screwed him. They didn't give him shit. They should have brought him in. He should be the general manager of Raw right now, Maddie.
I'd take that.
Yeah, probably. It'd be all right. So we cut from Maddie to, like, just four guys, like, hitting each other with pipes. it feels like I'm on a roller coaster, and it's just madness at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just people swinging pipes at each other. And it's during the Taz they say it's from the Kevin Sullivan and Taz versus Bruise Brothers tag title match, right? Then we cut to a promo with the Bruise Brothers, and they're talking about the ECW tag champs Public Enemy. And because of the cutting, I'm like, who are the tag champs? You just said you just showed me a clip from the Sullivan Taz Bruise Brothers tag title match, and now the Bruise Brothers are talking about the ECW tag team champs, the Public Enemy. And I just can't follow it.
I'm not going to lie to you. I've been watching these. And that confused me. Because Public Enemy are tag champions now. So the only thing I think of is, like, was that some kind of non-title thing that we saw? I'm with you, actually. That one part. So I don't know if they want it back from them. But that part has been confusing to me. I've been trying to piece it together myself.
I mean, look, it's probably not worth your time to figure out.
Well, I'm watching it still, so I'd like to have an idea. But
I
Public Enemy
what's
are
going on in the programs I watch.
Like, over the last day or so, I've gotten, like, two past where we left off. And they are champions. So whatever happens.
Yeah, well, they're champions at the end of this show.
Right.
Like, but also it looks like they're cutting the promo in an attic. Like, they're in a very small room with, like, a wooden roof with no insulation, talking about how they beat everybody up. And then now they cut to the Public Enemy, who are the champs. And now I feel that Rocco Rock looks like, I mean, I talked about how thin he was, but now to me, he looks like a fat Mark Merrow. Like, he's got the mustache, his face is plumper. And they cut this promo, and they talk about they say, we had girlfriends like you in prison. And then they say, we took them every night, twice. They're talking about raping men in prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I'm just so we're on the same page of what we're watching in this wrestling program, right? So we finally get to a match, okay, and it's Sabu versus Mike Awesome, which I was very excited. I didn't realize Mike Awesome was there that early, so I thought that was really cool. I knew Sabu was there forever.
Yeah, he had Awesome had just showed up. And all right, I found this tag title lineage. So on the night the line was crossed, that was their big show on February 5th at the ECW Arena.
Is that the one with all the stipulations?
No, this was back in February. This is I think this is when they did the three-way with Sabu, Shane Douglas, and Funk. I think is where Funk won the title. So on that show, Kevin Sullivan, the Tasmaniac, who were champions, they won it back in December. They lost to the Bruise Brothers, but it got held up. So then on March 5th, which is the event you're talking about, Sullivan and Taz defeated the Bruise Brothers in a rematch. But the Bruise Brothers won that match, right?
That's the pipe match?
Yeah, so they must have won there. No, you know what? Yes, because I remember now in the lead up to that show, it was something kind of weird. It was like they were having a match, and then the winners had to fight. I don't know if they had to fight the Bruise. I forgot the fuck it was. Whoever it is. Or maybe it was the Bruise Brothers beat Public Enemy, I think, to fight Sullivan and Tasmaniac. That might have been what it was. So anyway, Sullivan and Taz win on the 5th over the Bruise Brothers. And then Public Enemy beat them on March 6th. It aired on March 8th. So,
okay.
And then they hold it for a while, so we don't have to worry about it anymore.
You're explaining it to me calmly and concisely, and it's still confusing.
It is. So whatever. Public Enemy is the champion as of March 6th.
So that's what we need to know. Public Enemy is champion going forward. Mike Awesome looks great. Are we sure he's not Davey Boy Smith Jr.'s dad? Because I feel they have the exact same face.
Like, they do look like, very similar.
To a T. Was he the pervert that slept with Diana?
Pervert!
Joey Styles keeps calling Mike Awesome a 315-pound cat, which I find funny because they exist. Like, these are things that exist. Like, a jaguar is, like, heavier than 15 pounds. Like, just call him a jaguar. Awesome almost kills himself jumping out into the crowd, but, like, almost kills himself. And at this point, I'm thinking, like, could there be, like, in the world, two more dangerous workers to Sabu's health than Mike Awesome and Sabu himself. Like I can't imagine he got out of this match without being at least with a minor injury. Tall Henry Godwin attacks Mike Awesome, and Sabu wins eventually.
That's 9-1-1.
Yeah. It was fine. It was the best match on the show. It was the only match on the show. But it was
how they were calling him Awesome Mike Awesome.
Yeah, I did like that. I thought that was okay. I've always liked Mike Awesome. The first ECW show I ever saw was Anarchy Rules 1999. And because we didn't get the – we finally got – that's the first ECW pay-per-view we got in Montreal. And the main event was – well, not the main event. The title match was Taz versus Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka. And it was Taz's last match. And Mike Awesome was so good. I mean, everybody was so good that night. Mm-hmm. It's one of those wrestling shows promoted different than WWE, and you leave it thinking like – it was the same thing when I watched the first New Japan show I ever saw. You leave it thinking like, wow, like the world has kind of changed a bit. Like it's almost like it's a different standard. And I remember leaving that show thinking that, and Mike Awesome was a huge part of that. We cut now to a weird Paul E.
Hang
crying
on, hang
promo.
On. I got some thoughts here on that match.
Please. I'm just going, so jump in.
I am. The clothesline that Austin does to Sabu when he's sitting on the top rope is fucking nasty. He just fucking slings him to the floor. And then he dives. Sabu's in the crowd, and Awesome dives over the top into the crowd, which was great. Just rugged offense all throughout. I thought this was a real star performance for Awesome. Like, I thought he really stood out as, like, this guy looks like a fucking shining star. Like, I thought he really was the brightest star on the whole show, honestly, and especially in this match. Even though Sabu and 9-1-1 win, I really enjoyed Awesome. I thought he looked great.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think he's one of those guys who, when we look back at like the all of ECW and really all of wrestling history at that period, it's kind of crazy that he didn't get to a higher rung. Like we talked about how did Mr. Hughes reach his potential in the big leagues? I think we could agree Mike Awesome didn't.
Oh, definitely not. No, and that's because he went to WCW instead of WWF, I think. I think he's a guy that if he goes to WWF earlier than he does, I mean, I know he doesn't get used great, but by that point it was just Vince shitting on the WCW grave. If he goes to WWF in like 99, I think he does real well.
Yeah, he probably Vince likes him because he's big and he's also agile. But if Vince catches him banging one fat chick, he's out. You know how Vince is with relationships.
No fat bitches!
Rusev, you shouldn't be with Lana. So Paulie is thin, cutting a promo, and he's the second person crying on the show, which is strange. And I thought it was crazy because I wanted to look it up. He's 29 years old here. And is crazy. He running the promotion at this point?
Yeah, so it was him and Gilbert, and then Gilbert left. So I think Gordon – I don't know who specifically owns it. I think him and Gordon may own it, and then Paul – is like booking. But yeah, him and Eddie Gilbert were booking until Gilbert bolted in 94. September 93.
Wished as much by 29 as Paul Heyman had.
I know, right?
Also, he was born on September 11th. How do you feel about that?
I think it's fitting in some ways.
Yeah, he's quite the disaster, if you will. So then I think we get to, we're closing in on the end of the show, and we get Douglas and Sherry celebrating the title win. And Sherry's, just screaming, and Douglas is doing his Dean Douglas laugh over and over and over again. And now we get this like parade of people coming to congratulate him. The first person is a guy in a purple sweatshirt who tells him he's the greatest of all time. Who is that? I could not tell who that is.
No, I didn't write everyone down. No, it was either, they only had so many guys. It was either Rockin' Rebel, Johnny Hot Body, maybe. It was like one of those fucking scrubs came in.
Then was it the Sandman who came in next?
I don't think Sandman. He had just turned heel, so he may have. I wish I wrote down the guys. I did love, by the way, because Sherry's with him. And I love how she's pouring water on him, like instead of champagne. She's like dumping a bottle of water on him.
Yeah, and just screaming. Like I don't know, whatever she was crazy in the big leagues, and now she's just crazier, which I love. And then Public Enemy comes in to celebrate with him. But it occurs to me now, were the Harrises the faces in that match? And the Public Enemy was the heel? Or were they just both heels?
I think they're both heels.
Okay, because the Harrises are the Nazis with the SS tattoos, right?
correct, yes. But Public Enemy's been heels. But so is Sullivan and Taz. I think the whole division is heels.
The whole company's heel at this point. So then Todd Gordon comes in and is all upset, dressed as fucking Morpheus, cheap Morpheus. And he congratulates him. But then he congratulates him, but then he sticks around.
Right.
I don't know if that struck you as weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, what do you want from me? I congratulate you. Well, you could have left.
Right.
Congratulated him. And then Douglas is he calling out Lawrence Taylor? He says something about Lawrence Taylor.
Well, because he hadn't gone to WWF yet, so he must have been in the news or something for something.
Right. And then we cut back to Matty, and he's saying Rebel – and hoodies and roughnecks, oh my.
All right, so that must have been Rockin' Rebel then.
Oh, yeah, that's probably it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because Hughes was the roughneck. The hoodies was Public Enemy. And then Rebel.
Okay.
Okay, there you go.
Cool. And then I think he invents hashtag sorry, not sorry. Because he keeps saying sorry, not sorry. And then we close the show with Hawk in his shoulder pads with half of his paint messed up on his face. He's talking about being the sheriff of Valley Forge. And I he's not wearing a shirt. I don't know how he was deputized. He talks about how dead men can't feel pain. And his closing line is, time to see if you've got the hair growing, or you should be. And that's how the show ends.
Are you hyped for Hawk versus Shane Douglas?
I mean, look, if it happens in Valley Forge... Hawk's going to have a major advantage since he's the goddamn sheriff.
The next episode was actually really good, too. They really put a lot of good hype on Hawk and Shane Douglas. They did some nice stuff. Shane Douglas comes out, he comes in late 93 and he's just kind of there. And then, overnight, he's like the franchise. And, it really happens fast for him. And he takes to it really, really well. Like, he really feels above a lot of what they got going on as far as, character and promo. And, they almost kind of fell ass backwards into a star with him. I think that has something to do with it.
Wrestler.
But, huh?
He feels like a professional wrestler.
He does.
As opposed to guys who are professionally wrestling. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. It feels like he's classically trained and working with a bunch of guys it's like Gordon Bombay coaching up the Mighty Ducks, right? That's what it feels like. Right. When Adam Banks gets moved over to the Ducks, it's like, wow, this guy with actual training and skills is here to work with us. It feels kind of crazy.
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like, yes. Shane Douglas is hanging out with all these bums and scrubs.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, the show, it felt like someone was screaming at me for 28 minutes. But I didn't dislike it. It was fine. There were points where it felt long, when we got into the long promo segment and I was okay. But it wasn't a bad show. It was interesting. It was a really cool time capsule and it was so different than any other wrestling show I've ever seen.
I think it's what made it stand out and important for so long was that just how different it was from everything else. Because if you think of what WWF was in March of 94, how antiseptic. Well, just very basic, and they were, just getting to WrestleMania 10, and then, or they had just passed WrestleMania 10. So, really, just very basic. And WCW is arguably even, they were doing their own sudden thing. They were getting ready for Hogan to come in, yeah. And then you look at this. It's like this complete anarchy compared to those two. So, I could see why anyone who stumbled into this in 1994 would have been immediately captivated by what they were seeing. It's just so different from everything else. And it's fun because
14-year-old in me would have loved, if I had seen that pipe fight as a 14-year-old, I would have been all in on anything they were doing.
Well, you can see why they captivated a large teenage audience. That was their bread and butter. I mean, it's very clear why. So yeah, it's cool that I've enjoyed watching it. And I think it's interesting too, that, you shared your thoughts and it's not even a famous episode or anything. We just picked a random one that it happened to be on.
No.
So it was a good snapshot, but it wasn't it was a good glimpse of what their week to week was, is my point. Because it's not like you were seeing one of an infamous episode that was an outlier or anything like that.
Right. No, I was glad I watched it. It was cool. I'm glad you suggested it. At first, when you said ECW, I was like, oh, cool. And it wasn't what I expected at all.
Good. All right. So every few, if you have any suggestions for us of like random things we can watch, we don't want to do anything too long. Like I'd prefer if we just do like TV episodes of stuff. Like there's plenty on the network. We could do like like an All-Star or Global. You know, like there's a ton of shit on there that we could throw on. So if anyone
has any of their stupid original stuff, like
anything. Anything that's on the network and is like 45 minutes or less is kind of in our sweet spot for this segment. So if you have any suggestions, let us know. And try and avoid like the real famous stuff for now. Like we don't want to do the famous Raws or whatever. You know what I mean? Like give us something that's not Raw or Nitro, because I'm already doing that with Chad. So something that's not Raw or Nitro. Even like they go to those heats on there. Like there's gonna be something cool, right?
Yeah, or at least something angering. Like, either one will work.
Right. Cool. All right, why don't we take a break? There's our wrestling for the night. When we come back, it's time for some pop culture, and we have an interesting topic we'll dive into after this.
Make it pop! Pop! Pop!
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceForNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place for Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fat Boys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceForNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceForNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceForNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best. I want a girl with shoes that cut and
Hi, Place for Nation. We're back on segment number 3 of episode number 3 of the No Holds Barred, the podcast. Do you like that? I did it for you.
Yeah.
So, me and Aaron, before we get to our pop culture segment, we want to talk about what's going on in Place to Be Nation, the Place to Be Nation, the only place to be in your pop culture world. A lot of cool stuff going on here recently. We're going to talk about it. So, new episode of Main Event. Check that out, of course. Scott and brother Nate had Brandon Howard on talking about the first 6 months in the year of wrestling from a financials point of view. And then they talk some XFL. They talk Steve Willey. He comes in. And they do a TNA pay-per-view rewind, so check that out. An episode of Survey Says as well went up. Matt Souza made his Place to Be Nation debut, looking at his top 4 albums of the year so far. So check that out. Support him. What else we got? A new installment of Stacey's Divas Deep Dive. She talks about the struggle that the divas in the 2000s faced, I should say, during their time. And Aaron, did you read this thing yet?
I did, actually. I've been reading all of Stacey's stuff so far.
It's excellent. And, I thought this one was excellent.
I like it. I like it a lot. It's a lot of excuse making, but it's excellent.
Yeah.
I only say that in case she's listening. That's the only reason I say it.
No, it's a great look at kind of what they were battling during that time. And this whole series is going to be really, really good. So we're happy to have it here. Be sure to check it out.
She makes this great point about how, like, I think it was something like four matches had only gone over 10 minutes.
Right.
Like up until the Four Horsewomen came up. And that's such a damning stat.
Yeah.
Like I'd never given any thought to before. So that's, I mean, just for like little insights like that alone, I'm really digging the series.
Yep. And then she also, like, I think another good point was the lack of training, you know, they just get thrown in the ring and expected to have these matches. So there's a lot of good stuff in there that she talks about. So check that out. And then, of course, we have three feeds, Place Me Nation Wrestling, Place Me Nation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. Scott and I were back with Peter Winston this past Monday. We looked at the Saturday's Main Event from April of 88. We'll be back this Monday looking at the May 88 MSG with a very brand new guest. So be sure to peep that as it comes out. Wrestling Warzone as well. Chad and I looked at the week of 10/16/95 TV. So we'll be up to In Your House 4 on the next episode of that. So you can find those in the PlayStation Nation Wrestling feed. And, of course, PlayStation Pop has plenty of good stuff. A lot of the comic stuff is on there worth checking out. The Marvel Age podcast and the Marvel Age Masterclass with Ben Morse, who's getting his nipple pics all over Facebook. So check those out, too, if you're friends with them. Of course, those are hot. And Brand New Geek and Sassy as well. That's one of my top listens when that drops. Always a lot of fun when the ladies are back. I heard this one goes off the rails a bit, so I'm looking forward to that. So be sure to check it out all at PlayStation.com and our respective podcast feeds.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. You nailed that. Okay?
Thanks,
buddy. Let me just say that. You nailed it. Mm. Yeah.
I nailed it like Mike Awesome diving into the crowd.
Nailing that fan in the front row who paid to be there.
Awesome, Mike, awesome. All right, pop culture time, Aaron, for segment fall number 3. And this week, I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about guilty pleasure movies.
Now, define guilty pleasure for me right off the bat.
Movies that you jerk off during.
Oh, God. Okay, well, there's a long list to have, but I have no. One line to see them.
No, so it's movies that I think, like, on the surface are not ones you either, I don't say want to admit, but like aren't probably movies that like everyone sits and watches. But if they're on, you will find yourself watching it. Now, this has actually diminished a bit for me since I've got rid of cable.
Right.
I don't just flip through the channels anymore. So I rarely just like stumble into a movie and leave it on. So these are more like ones I used to or ones I had DVR'd and would always just throw them on as like comfort. Right.
So right, like comfort food.
Yeah. Or like my son would be up. You know, when he was first born and my wife was nursing him, it was like 3 a.m. He was up to eat and we'd be laying in bed and like, okay, like I can't even flip through the fucking channels. Let's put something on. And we'd just like throw one of these movies on, you know? So like I have a few of those and then one other one that I want to talk about. So what's your number one guilty pleasure movie? These aren't ranked. Just what's your first, I should say.
Oh, okay. Well, a movie I have ranked above, like, have you ever heard of Flick Chart?
No.
Check out flickchart.com at some point. It's basically a website that allows you to rank movies against each other, mm-hmm. and you'll eventually build a definitive ranking of all your movies. So I just had to go on this and find the worst movie that's closest to my top, basically, okay. I thought. And for me, a guilty pleasure movie is a movie that like clearly has some major warts, but I love all the same anyway. Like someone might tell you it's a crap movie, but I can't help love it. So my first – I mean people might scream at their – I was going to say screens, but I guess they'll punch their earbuds into their ears when they hear this. My first one's Rocky IV. I love Rocky IV. It's probably my favorite Rocky, but as a movie, it's awful.
Like, see, I don't think I'd count that as guilty pleasure though, because I feel like that's a real popular movie.
But it's not good. Mm. Like it's the laziest movie I've ever seen. It's as though he handed it in the script and they're like, Sly, you need another 20 minutes here to get to 80 minutes. Like, there's two training montages, right? Two complete training montages. There's a montage where he drives to the airport And they just recap the first three movies. And there's an entire like scene with a butler robot. Now you might think that's awesome, but as a cinephile who enjoys characters and development, it's not good. But I love the movie with all my heart. That'd be my number one. But I think we might have a slightly different. Like you're going on more like movies you're ashamed to like. Is that it?
Well, not even ashamed. Just ones like that aren't like popular or may not be. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know. I'll just say what they are and you can tell me what the fuck I'm doing. How about that?
I'm just going to look. You're going to tell me I'm wrong. I'm going to tell you you're wrong, regardless of what it is.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so my first one I'm going to talk about is it's complicated. Now, I mentioned this before on the PlayStation podcast and we get mocked for it. It stars, are you aware of this movie?
Is that Alec Baldwin?
It's Alec Baldwin, Meryl Streep, Steve Martin. Jim Cable.
Old people
Jim
Cable.
Tim Cable. No, Jim Halpert
Tim
from The Office.
In it?
Jim Halpert from The Office is in it. Trying to think of it.
It has a name.
John Krasinski. Trying to think of anyone else that's like
that it?
Known. That's all the major people. So anyway.
Okay.
So it's a Nancy Meyers movie.
why this?
All right. So in early 2011, my wife went away for work and it was kind of a tough time. Like, I don't know how much of this is documented, but she had a hard time trying to get pregnant, right? A couple of miscarriages and whatnot. So this is like during kind of a rough time. It was like right before she finally got pregnant with my daughter. So a rough stretch, she goes away for work and I'm going to be meeting her in Florida at my parents' condo in Naples. She was going to Miami. So we're looking forward to just like a few days away. So the day she leaves, we get like a major snowstorm and I get a massive major stomach bug, like just brutal, like wiped out. I could barely take care of myself. And here I am having to take care of myself and I can't move.
Right.
And the guy's coming to plow my driveway. I could barely get outside to move my car. Like I am just like walking dead. And we had HBO and I'm just flipping through and like just no energy, no power to do anything. And I stumble across It's Complicated and I just start watching it. And I'm like, all right, it's funny enough. And it has its moments and you know, then it's on HBO West. Right. So I'm like, fuck it. Just leave it on. And it just kind of became a thing where like, it just like relaxed
me.
Did
you watch twice?
Yeah.
Twice in a row.
I think so. I probably watched it like, I think it was more than that off and on throughout that week, throughout those like 2 days, like when it was just on a lot. And like, I actually started to like it. I like grew this fondness for it. And it was such a comfort to me in that moment. Cause it's like, it's such an easy movie. Like most Nancy Meyers movies, I believe, are the same. It's like, it's set in like Santa Barbara. Everyone's like, everyone's good looking. Like the scenery is great. Like, it's just like nice calming music. It's just like, it's just kind of goofy comedy. Like it's very, like, it's just an easy watch. Like there's no stress to it. I'm not like, so then it kind of takes on a life of its own. Like I find out one of my friend's wives likes it. And then we start like posting on Facebook, like comments about it. And like, we still talk about it. And like, so then my wife, you know, I go see her and I tell her and then we end up watching and then ends up on my DVR. And then it becomes just one of those movies where if like nothing was on or it was late night and we're feeding the baby, like we just throw it on where it almost became like cultish, like mocking in a way, but also liked it in a way. Like there's lines that we just like quote to each other. And I don't know, like, I think there's legitimately funny parts to it. And then, but it's just, it's really cheesy. And it's just a very simple movie. And after a while, this kind of became its own fucking thing in my life. It's Complicated. So there you go. That's guilty pleasure.
Love it.
You understand?
Now, I got to ask the question that I'm sure everybody's thinking after you told that story. Did you conceive your daughter in your parents' bed?
No.
So my next guilty pleasure movie is one that it's much maligned. See, I guess I'm just going on. Now, this one's not – I mean, it's popular, but people hate it, and I really like it. And it's The Matrix Reloaded. It's the second Matrix, which is probably my favorite Matrix, which, again, I probably – people are saying now he doesn't know shit about movies, which is probably true. But what I love about it is that I was never super into The Matrix. I liked it. I thought it was fine. The first time I went to see The Matrix, I went to see it in the theater, and I walked out of it. I was so bored, I walked out of it. And I went to go see Analyze That for the second time, which is awfully damning.
That would be a good guilty pleasure movie, Analyze That.
Analyze That. What I like about The Matrix is I like all the action scenes, and I find The Matrix Reloaded, the action scenes are just awesome. It's just a fun, awesome ride. Now the story is stupid, and then you get to the end and there's this old man like talking jargon for like 25 minutes, which is so jarring after an hour and 40 minutes of just like people swinging swords and axes and jumping from cars. You get this like scientific debate for like 20 minutes. It's the most jarring thing. But people loathe The Matrix Reloaded, and I don't know. I don't mind it at all. I think it's a lot of fun. And if I was going to watch a Matrix right now, it'd probably be that. Maybe I don't understand the concept of this. Is it possible?
So I just thought of our next pop culture segment. Famous movies you're embarrassed to admit you've never seen.
Oh, that's good.
So I've never seen The Matrixes, any of them. I own them, but I've never seen them.
The Matrixes?
Matrixes.
Matrixes. You know, I'll say this. I work with a lot of young actors. Actors that come out of theater school and film school, and I'm constantly like baffled / angry at things they haven't seen. Like I worked on a show where like people didn't know who Laurence Olivier was, or like the whole cast had never seen The Godfather. And it's like, well, why are you an actor?
Right.
what are the things that like inspired you? And they're like, well, I play video games and I like the characters in the video games.
I think I'll shock you with some of the movies I haven't seen. I think it'll be a good topic.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep it in mind, because I might shock you too.
Okay. Almost like a Shockmaster.
Is that your next movie, The Shockmaster?
I wish. Okay, my next one is not similar, it's complicated, but it's just as stupid. That's Ready to Rumble with David Arquette. I love that fucking masterpiece. Oh, it's so good. It's just so stupid. It's so dumb. And of course it's WCW, right? It's just because it's so stupid. But it's infectious, everything about it. It's just done with this slant on kayfabe that's just amazing in 1999 when Vince Russo and others are doing everything they could to piss and shit all over it. Here you have this glorious masterpiece that's just like honor. This just lives in kayfabe. Everything about it, the fucking hot tub truck, like there's so much ridiculousness. You know, Jimmy King, like it's such a dumb gimmick, like the King, who this, you know, this fat guy who looks nothing like he should be a wrestler, but here he is, Oliver Pratt. The whole thing is just dumb. But, and then like at the end when he's like, I'm going to go for the tag team titles, and he brings out fucking, what's his name? David Arquette. Now all of a sudden the tag team, him and Jimmy King with the other guy as a manager. It's like, so the whole, all of it is just so dumb. And then like, you know, Rose McGowan just wanted to like hang herself being even like involved in this thing, but there she is.
Right.
So just like everything about it, it just encapsulates such a good dumb time in WCW history, and it's forever imprinted in this movie.
I bet Oliver Platt treated her with respect though on the set.
Did I say
I
Pratt?
Can guarantee you that.
Yeah.
Did I say Pratt?
No, I said Platt. Pratt. I said Pratt.
I said Platt. I love that movie too. I saw it for the first time in a hotel room. I was touring with a Shakespeare in the Park show all across the States, and I was in a hotel room with a bunch of Shakespearean actors, and I convinced them to watch this thing, to buy it on pay-per-view in the hotel, and they were not impressed at all. But I loved it, so that's what counts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, my next one. I went on it. I took this. I went to this movie on a date, and and it was a good sign for the date that her and I were just roaring throughout the movie. Right from the opening credit sequence, we were laughing and we enjoyed the whole thing. But it's one of those experiences, I don't know if you've ever been in one of these, where like you're the only person in the theater laughing. Like the theater is actually full of people, but no one is laughing except you. It didn't bother me because this movie was Snakes on a Plane. And I mean, when you talk masterpiece, right from the start, the way the title card happens is the word snakes appears, And then it disappears and says, on a plane. And I audibly went, yes, in the theater, which, I mean, like, I don't speak during movies often. I try to stay quiet unless someone is making noise. And top to bottom, like, this movie, I mean, it's awful, obviously. It's based on Samuel Jackson talking about motherfucking snakes on a motherfucking plane. But it's so stupid. There's a line in the movie that, like, someone wrote in a script that says, fuck a snake, get off my dick. Like, someone was paid to write that, someone was paid to say that. The entire premise revolves around, like, someone putting snakes on a plane to kill a witness. Have you seen Snakes on a Plane, by the way?
I have not.
So the whole premise is this guy, this idiot, witnesses a murder. And the FBI gets to him, and so they're going to bring him back to the state. They're in Hawaii or something. So they're going to bring him back stateside to testify. So the bad guy, who's this very angry Asian man.
Is it Ken Jeong?
Puts a bunch of snakes. It's not. But he would fit right in, though. He puts a bunch of snakes on the plane, and he puts a bomb on the snake cage to go off to release the snakes. Now, immediately, you should be thinking, like, if he could put a bomb to release the snakes, like, why didn't he just blow up the fucking plane?
Right, right.
Like, that's a pretty big plot.
He can't make a big bomb. He can only make a snake-sized bomb.
A snake-sized bomb. But it's just, it's an hour and a half of snake attacks. It's an hour and a half of just the most ridiculous dialogue. There's one part where, like, I mean, there's lines like, we have to form a barrier between us and the snakes. Like, stuff you'd never imagine. And there's one point where the lights just go off on the plane. Power just goes off. And someone faintly in the background yells, it's snakes! Which always makes me laugh because as though they're now biting through the wires intentionally. It's just stupid. It's stupidity for like 90 minutes, but holy shit, was it fun. And I mean, she was laughing too on the date, so it was a good sign that we were going to get along.
Good. Obviously it not. Obviously it didn't work out that well.
No. Well, it could have been my wife I was talking about.
Maybe. Still, I'd argue it didn't work out well.
For her.
Exactly. All right, my next one is in a similar vein to It's Complicated, but not as lame. And it was another one that ended up on my DVR that would kind of be just a throw-it-on movie, and that's Going the Distance, a rom-com. Have you seen this one, Drew Barrymore?
No.
All right, so it actually has a really good cast, and it's quite kind of a hidden funny movie. So it's got Justin Long, who I am an unapologetic fan of. I think he's underrated. And also has Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis, Christina Applegate. So it's like, it's a pretty good crew. Charlie and Sudeikis are real funny as the friends of Justin Long. So it's basically these two people who are just single and doing their own thing meet. And one of them's like moving to California. So they have to do a long distance relationship and all the shit that goes with that. So I think it's good. I think it's well done. And again, it feels a little bit more real than a lot of movies. Like the way I don't know if it's the way they shot it or the way they act, but it almost feels like they did a bunch of improv too. Like if you see some of the scenes they do with where it's her, where it's just the two of them, like on dates and stuff. Like it feels like he's like legitimately like cracking her up and stuff. So it feels a little bit more realistic than some movies. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. I think it's a pretty good romantic comedy. So
yeah, I'm not big on the romantic comedies, but. Maybe we should do something where you force me to watch one of them.
You should watch Go in the Distance. There you go.
Or It's Complicated. See if it calms me down. Spoiler, it won't. I got one more. You got one more?
Yeah, go ahead. You go.
Okay. My last one is the third in a series of movies that I hate all the other ones. But for some reason, I like this one. And I think it's because they changed directors. It's not good, again. It's Scary Movie 3. Like I don't like any of those movies, any of the spoofs. I like the original spoofs, like Naked Gun and Hot Shots and all that. But then these spoofs are just awful for the most part. But this one, I don't know what they did. I think they got the directors of Naked Gun to do it. Leslie Nielsen is the president of the United States. And they're basically lampooning 8 Mile and Signs. And the way they lampoon 8 Mile is great. I think it's a very funny send-off of 8 Mile. It has a moment where like a guy throws up on a guy sitting on a toilet trying to take a shit, and it's the most childish thing, but I can't help but laugh at it now. And then there's also this conversation about someone says if you do such and such, the next morning you're going to wake up dead. And then they get into this whole diatribe about how it's redundant. You can't wake up dead. You're either just dead. So it's a stupid movie. But it transcends the other ones, I find. And it actually starts to spoof general things as opposed to only specific things, which is I found these spoofs often did not do. So I don't know. Have you seen Scary Movie 3?
Ah, fuck. I don't remember if I've seen 3. I know I've seen, like, I definitely saw at least the first 2. I don't remember if I saw 3 or not. Those, it's funny because they kind of stopped those movies. Like, I remember going to see Date Movie with this girl I worked with. And then, like, was it Action Movie? I don't know. What the fuck were the other ones they did? Like, they went on that run.
Oh, there's for sure an action movie. Epic.
Epic Movie, that's what it was. Yeah, they did a bunch of those during that stretch, so, where they would just mock all of the, and some were funny in spots. Somewhere, whatever. All right, my final one is, I guess, another romantic comedy, more of a comedy based on The Crew. And that is She's Out of My League. Have you seen that one?
Nope.
All right. So that's got Jay Baruchel. Is that how to spell his name? Say his name?
Montrealer.
Okay. Kristen Ritter, Alice Eve, who's a fucking smoke show, TJ Miller, who would go on to Silicon Valley eventually.
Deadpool.
It's got what's-her-face from 70 Show, the mom. So she's in there. It's really funny. Again, it's a really funny movie. So I'll leave it at that.
Cool. Well, those are some pretty – I mean, look, I don't think anything we named is necessarily a bad movie. But I know I've definitely argued about these movies with people at right. least once.
Yes. I've defended myself for maybe, it's complicated more than once. So.
Maybe by next time, when we do movies, I'll understand the concept a little bit better.
Well, we definitely gonna do movies you don't want to admit you haven't seen. That's a must.
Sure, right. And I think also what we can do down the line is movies that everyone likes that you don't.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah. Like,
it's complicated.
Yeah, well, you like that.
Exactly. All right, so why don't we wrap up with our sudden death segment? That's our top 5. And Aaron, you challenged me on this. You challenged me on this one. You said, are you prepared to do your top 5 comic book characters? Is that true?
Yeah, well, I said, are you good with doing a comic-themed one?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, let's do characters. And I thought you were – I was impressed you rose to the challenge.
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting to do because I kind of want to do it now and then maybe do it again in like another 6 months when I've read more and see if it holds up. And I've taken this tack. So I've seen some comics movies like we talked about in episode 1. But the tack that I took is I'm going strictly comic books from where I've started in Marvel. So like I'm not going to cheat and say like Batman from Batman Begins. You know, like I'm going like
right.
with the actual characters I've been reading in these books. So basically good. 1963, 64 Marvel is where I'm working with.
Okay.
All right. So you want me to do mine first? My
go
number
ahead.
Five.
You go number 5 first.
Okay. My number 5 is a guy who I've seen a few times, and I know he got his own book, and it kind of shit the bed. So they start working him in as a you know antagonist for the other superheroes, and that kind of restabilized him. That's the Incredible Hulk, who I think has been enjoyable. Like I liked the one where he comes to Fantastic Four and battles the Thing. Like that was really enjoyable. So I feel like, you know, and it's a background I never really heard. Like obviously I knew like Lou Ferrigno was a Hulk and like I know of the Hulk, but I've never really seen a lot of Hulk stuff. So it was interesting to kind of see the background of it here. And then like, I actually didn't mind his initial book. Like I was kind of surprised when they talked about a Marvel Age, how it really bombed. So they had to kill it off, but then how he comes back in other books. And I thought it's been well done so far, right, where he's popped up. So he's my 5th so far.
Nice. I like the Hulk a lot. I think my favorite Hulk story is it's recent, for those of you who might want to check it out. It's a real like Planet Hulk. He gets blasted away to another planet by some of the Avengers, well, the Illuminati. And once in space, he kind of like forms he basically starts a whole new life. On this new planet, and then he has to come back to Earth when something happens to the planet, and that series is called World War Hulk. So I quite enjoyed that whole series, and they made an animated show about it too. It's good. It's fun. My number 5 is a guy who I've never enjoyed in his own book, but I absolutely love him anytime the Marvel Universe has to deal with a big problem that they get together. He's not in it, but in, to give you a context of something like the Infinity Gauntlet, where everyone has to come together to fight a big villain. And that's Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. I really dislike him. I find the Fantastic Four in general hard to read. But I find in a group setting, when he's not the focus of the book, he is so fascinating. Specifically, in a title called Earth X. Earth X is basically... the early 2000s, DC did a series called Kingdom Come, which was basically the DC superheroes, I think 20 or 30 years in the future. And Earth X was Marvel's answer to it. And Earth X is basically, these heroes dealing with a major problem 30 years in the future. And Reed Richards is by far for me the most fascinating character in it. He's just steeped in pathos. He thinks he's doomed the Earth. He's so upset about what he's done that he has to work in to actually try to solve this crisis. But in order to stay in the castle, he has to dress up like Dr. Doom to trick Dr. Doom's security system. So he's walking around like Reed Richards in Dr. Doom's armor, like basically that he's become based on what he thought he did to the Earth. So for me, Reed Richards, specifically in group pieces, specifically in Earth X.
All right, my number four is a guy who I think I've only seen one story of so far, but I really enjoyed the origin story despite all the real bad racism that's blown out throughout it, and that's Iron Man. Obviously very casual racism, I guess. But I like that origin story too. Like, I didn't realize – I actually have movies I haven't seen. I haven't seen the Iron Man movie. So, like, I had no idea about, like, the background of Tony Stark, and he was a giant playboy, and – how he becomes what he becomes. So that was all real interesting to me, and I'm looking forward to seeing more on that.
Cool. My number four is from the Walking Dead comic. I don't watch the show. I didn't like the show. I tried to watch it, but it didn't click for me. But the comic I love, and my favorite character in the comic is Negan. Do you watch the Walking Dead show?
No, too scary for me.
Too scary for you. Well, Negan is basically an antagonist who shows up quite late in the series. But he's in the comic, he's like the perfect blend of terrifying and hilarious. He's super cheerful while he's like bashing in your skull. He says funny things and then he'll do something awful and be like, "Look, I'm reasonable. Look, right? I'm reasonable. You see?" Like, he just constantly makes me laugh. And where his character goes in the series, I'm not completely caught up, but I'm probably about 10 issues behind. And where his character goes is actually really interesting. The changes he makes, and I think he's a fascinating character, and if you've read him, you know, if you've read him and you're watching the show, you're looking forward to him getting there. I don't know how he's done in the show. I hear it's mixed reviews a little bit, but as a comic character, Negan's number four for me.
All right, my number three, you mentioned Reed, but I'm just going with the entire Fantastic Four. I'm sorry, I'm so limited. I'm just going to – whatever. Going in as a group.
That's good. It's good.
I do find them enjoyable, especially the stuff with Dr. Doom when they face him. And I do love I just finished the annual with the whole big Namor battle, which I really, really liked that. If we do like a villains, I think Namor might be my favorite so far. So I really liked all of that. So that put him here. I'd put them one, but one and two for me are probably going to be one and two for a while. So they're like the highest of my non-favorites. But that one alone was excellent. I really, really enjoyed that story. And they're getting a little bit better. Like, they're starting to treat Sue as less of a, hey, dime, you know, dame, whatever the fuck, come here. You know, like stuff like that. Like, she's actually getting a little bit more to do. What's your obsession with the word? Is it blamed? BLAMED? Like, they see it all the fucking time, especially in the Sergeant Fury. Like, they see it like 19 times in that one story.
I don't know.
This blamed rocket. It's not blamed. It's like, like, I don't know if they're trying to say, like, it's almost like damn, but not, you know, it's odd.
But they can't write damned?
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's weird.
Did they have a comic? They didn't have a commerce code. They could write whatever they want. Do you know anything about the comics code?
I have no fucking idea. I don't know if I can.
All right. My number three is from my favorite comic book series of all time. It's the lead character in The Sandman. He goes by many names, Dream, Morpheus. But he's basically – it's a strange thing because he's a protagonist who's almost invincible. And it's really just a lot about his psychological torment and how he is such an unrelenting prick, but how he can see the error in his ways. The concept of the Sandman is there's seven endless who have basically been around since the beginning of time. One is dream, desire, there's desire, there's destruction, there's delirium. One of them is death, who's represented by this cute little, very pale white girl with black hair. But Morpheus is the main character, and he's just a fascinating, without him, where it goes in one philosophical places. It for me, it transcends the genre of comic books, and it's a lot to do with how caught up you get in his character. So it would be Dream Morpheus from The Sandman.
All right. My number two is we talked about the Norse mythology stuff in the first episode, and nice. I've enjoyed Thor so far. I haven't gotten too much Thor. I'm hoping to get more. I think soon he's starting to pop up. So just on principle alone, just from the mythology piece of it, he's going to be one of my favorites, and I've enjoyed what I've read so far. So he's my number two.
Nice. Mine is the main villain from one of the main villains from the series called Preacher. His name is Herr Starr. He's a German guy who is running this organization called the Grail, which has been responsible for maintaining Christ's bloodline since Christ, basically. So, and he's this very serious German guy with a lot of resources at his disposal, but the most awful, fucked up shit keeps happening to him. So he becomes also one of the saddest characters in all the comic. But all the while, he's just so mean and maintains his meanness, maintains his humor. Preacher's a great series. If you want to read something different than the Marvel stuff you're doing, Preacher's so unlike anything you'll read. So I know there's a show now, but the comic book was revolutionary, and I still love it.
All right. So my number one shouldn't be much of a surprise. Anyone that's following along or at least knows that era, it's Spider-Man. I think he's been the best developed. He's had the best stories. He's got the best look. Everything about Spider-Man has been excellent so far. I've really enjoyed the origins of what we've seen, and I liked when he popped in Fantastic Four. And just seeing him, one of the most conflicted characters we've had that I've seen so far with, obviously gets the power, but he's kind of beating himself up, but he's unsure how to use it. And at first he's just doing it for money. And, he's starting to figure out that he should use it for good. So all of that is starting to come together for him. And I think there's more really good stuff to come from where I'm at, but Spider-Man.
Nice. Well, mine is Peter Parker, but specifically Peter Parker from the Ultimate Spider-Man comic books. I actually wrote a piece for Place to Be Nation not long ago, talking about how my love of these comics. But Peter Parker, when they redid Spider-Man, it was in 1999, and they basically rebooted the whole story, but in the year 1999. So you're dealing with Peter Parker as a teenager in a modern setting. And he's written in such a way that you're immediately attached to him. You see him kind of the way you're talking about how he's conflicted in the old books too, but he's also conflicted a lot about just being Spider-Man and wanting to be a kid and wanting to have a normal relationship with his girlfriend. And I find the Peter Parker bits end up being way more compelling than the Spider-Man bits, which I never thought I would say as a comic book reader. So Peter Parker from Ultimate Spider-Man is my numero uno.
All right. So how do you think I did? All right.
You did great. You did great. That's great. I knew that our lists would be different, but I think it's awesome that we have the same number one, basically.
Right. Yeah, I don't see Spider-Man budging, probably. So I think my 1-2 is probably going to be the same for a while. But we'll check back when I'm further along and see if it's holding up or if anyone new pops up. So I know I get X-Men and Avengers and that shit really starting to crop up very soon. So
wait until you get 1960s Professor X. Oh, my God.
Okay. Very good. Looking forward to it. And actually, I just listened to the Marvel Age Masterclass 64 with Todd and Ben, so I enjoyed that. So I'm a little bit ahead on the listening, but I find that they do it nicely. It doesn't really spoil for me, It almost primes me to read it, so I kind of have some background. So it seems counterintuitive. It seems like it'd make more sense to read it and then listen to the breakdown. But I've actually found value in hearing about it and then reading it.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
All right, really quick, your post-match celebration, a recent moment of joy you want to celebrate.
Sure. Just before we read this podcast, I went on a really great, I live in LaSalle, which is a suburb of Montreal, but not far enough, not too far. And there's a bike path nearby, and me and my 6-year-old son basically biked downtown and back. And it was this really great, like, 2-hour bike ride and, like, just watching him bike and really starting to master it. And we got to this place where they were, like, they set up these kind of, like, weird hoses with, like, mist. So, like, you could just go in to cool off, but it didn't get you wet. And he was just laughing and having this awesome time. And it was just, like, it was just a really great 2 hours of solid, awesome, special time. And I mean, I don't know if you feel this having more than one child, but I have three sons and, like, it's hard to get one-on-one time mm-hmm. with any of them because, you know, you go and the other one wants to come, you know? So this was really special and it was great.
Good. Very good. You should definitely come visit so he can teach my daughter how to ride her bike because she's still, like, petrified of it. Like, I try. And it's the same bullshit over and over.
Are you doing training wheels?
Yeah.
See, we skipped the training wheels.
Take them off.
We did a balance bike first. Not a tricycle, balance bike. And we found that, like, because of the balance bike, he picked up the regular bike, like, immediately.
Interesting. Okay. Because my son's three, and he's actually, he has one training wheels, and he's been fine. like he picked it up quicker than she. It's frustrating. She just freaks out. But anyway. So I'm going back to my stupid home, small, tiny basketball league. Wednesday, said we played at a real court, which we rarely do. So it was a real slog of a game because it has the double rim, because it's a public playground. So it's just not easy. It's completely different than we're used to. And so we're battling, and the Cowboy just had, like, a brutal game. And he's quite good, but he had a real bad game. And we needed two more to win, and he takes his two-pointer, which is, like, a three for us, from deep. And he had been off all night and hit it. And, like, I get excited when we win a basketball, but that was such a moment of relief and joy that I audibly let out, like a big yes and a fist pump. Like, I never really get, like, that pump. But, I was so happy for him to hit the shot and to win and the game to be fucking over because it had gone on for a while. We were exhausted. So it was just, like, a pure moment of, like, absolute joy when he hit that shot. It was, like, I really felt good for a moment there. And I couldn't control it. I just let loose. It was, like, it's complicated. Popped on. I just got real fucking pumped, so.
Real fucking comfortable on that basketball court.
All right. So I hope everyone enjoyed episode 3 of No Holds Barred. I had a good time. Did you?
Yeah. I always do when I'm talking to a jockass like you.
You dookie face. So, all right. Oh. We'll be back at some point. Episode 4. If you have any ideas for topics, whether it's for something to watch, tag teams to talk about, other
top
wrestling
fives.
Topics, top fives, pop culture topics, you know the format by now. So let us know and we'll cover them. For now, though, that's Aaron. I'm JT. We be out. We'll talk to you soon.
I've been
Bye.
Driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel.